What's better than one John?
Here's Johnny.
Nobody really knows. That's why we put two of them together. This is Canzano and Wilner,
a.k.a. John and John.
Well, I was in Las Vegas for the men's and women's Pac-12 finales, as the basketball tournaments were known as. We're going to talk about that today, plus the NCAA tournament. March Madness is upon us. I'm John Canzano. You can read me at johncanzano.com. Get a free subscription or a paid subscription. What works for you works for me. John Wilner, Bay Area News Group superstar. You can find him at Pac-12Hotline.com. I want to start by playing Ashley Adamson's farewell. Pac-12 Network signed off on Saturday night at T-Mobile Arena with Ashley Adamson and some eloquent words. Here's how it went down.
I'm all right. It's weird when you've been thinking about a moment for a while and then that moment actually comes, and that's happening right now. So this is the last show that I am scheduled to host on this network, and it would be impossible for me to try to sit here and in the last 30 seconds talk about what it has meant to be a part of this thing. So instead, I'm going to use this time to show some of the brilliant people who need and deserve some shine. And you mentioned them, Don. There are so many people behind the scenes. A lot of them are here. A lot of them are back in San Ramon. And I just want to say from the bottom of my heart, we get to sit up here and be the face of this thing, but it's all of these people who deserve so much credit, who have worked through so much uncertainty, and they have just kept showing up and pouring their lives into this thing. So I love you all. Thank you. And all of you watching at home, you know who you are. Thank you for everything you've done. The reality is, we don't really know what's ahead. There is a ton of uncertainty. We work in an age in college athletics when the only thing that is guaranteed is more change. So as we sign off tonight, I'm going to leave you with some words from my favorite artist, the great Bruce Springsteen. Everything dies, baby. That's a fact. But maybe everything dies, someday comes back.
That's right.
So long.
Amen,
good night.
Ash.
And we'll see you down the road. Congratulations to Oregon, and thank you to everybody for spending some time with us tonight.
Now, amen. Incredibly classy sign-off by Ashley Adamson. 12 years of the Pac-12 Network, final men's basketball game. Wilner, I was in the arena on Saturday night, and, you know, when Ashley is doing that sign-off, she's got like 50 or 70 Pac-12 Network staff members, camera people, Pac-12 conference staff sort of assembled around her. And then they watched this video that was sort of like the sign-off video from the conference tournament, and they took a group picture. It was a pretty moving scene, and the vibe there was very, I think there was, you know, a lot of people celebrating the basketball, but a lot of people there going, gosh, this is the last one as we know it.
I thought that her sign-off was perfect. You know, she has been complete pro for 12 years. I believe she was at the network when it started. And in many ways, I think Adamson has been, you know, she's kind of the heart and soul of that operation over there. And I don't just mean the network, the whole conference, right? I mean, that's who I think about when I start thinking about people over there who have been there the entire time, right? When I start thinking about people who have been there the entire time, she, first person to come to mind. She's been the face of the network, along with, you know, Mike Yam for many years, and the heart and the soul of the conference. And she has done a great job since August 4th, you know, as has everybody with the Pac-12 networks in incredibly difficult circumstances. So it is weird. The whole thing is weird. It was weird when football ended, the championship game, same kind of vibe. Now it's a little bit more final because the spring sports don't carry the same interest as the winter sports and the fall sports. So in some ways, it's kind of the closing of the story right now.
It was weird to me. I didn't expect it because I went for the women's tournament. Then I flew back to the Pacific Northwest and I came back for the men's tournament. And it didn't strike me. And I'm kicking myself for not realizing this. Like, the end of football felt a little somber and you're kind of looking around. But you look at Oregon and you look at Washington, you look at the ambition, you look at college football and you go, okay, I understand what they were thinking. But it really hit me like a bag of bricks during the women's tournament in Vegas. I'm looking at UCLA, USC, Stanford, Oregon State in particular in the semifinals and then the final matchup. And I'm watching, you know, 8,000 fans file into the MGM Grand Garden Arena. And I'm going to myself, there's nothing wrong with women's college basketball in the Pac-12. This is working. And it's working big time. And you look at the number of teams, 7 teams in the tournament. And so there's nothing wrong with this, and none of these teams really want to leave. And so there was a real sadness around that tournament. And then it happened again at the men's tournament, but in a different way. It wasn't necessarily the teams, although Tad Boyle at Colorado talked about the history of the conference, and Dana Altman talked about, you know, more or less this didn't have to happen, but you got to be excited where we're going. And then it was the fans, Wilner. It was, you know, there was a pastor from Pullman, Washington, who drove from Pullman all the way to Vegas to see Washington State play. There was an 8-year-old kid in the stands whose parents pulled him out of school and said, "This is the last tournament, I want you to see it." There was a mayor in Camas, Washington, who tapped me on the shoulder at one game and said, "Hey, I listened to you and Wilner on this podcast, and, you know, I don't really have a team." He said, "I don't root for a team. This is my conference, though." And he brought his daughter. And then the souvenir stand had Pac-12 branded shirts with all 12 schools, 6 down one sleeve, 6 down the other. They couldn't keep them in stock. People were buying those. It was nostalgia. And it was just a really surreal feeling to see so many people. They broke records on the opening day and the second day sessions for attendance at T-Mobile for the Pac-12 tournament. It was just a weird thing to see people show up and go, I want to be here for the last one.
It's kind of like, I mean, it's attending a memorial service in some ways, right? For a lot of folks emotionally. I have to think that was a big part of it. And we will see what comes next. I think certainly Ashley was right with that quotation. And as we are recording today on Tuesday, the 19th, right? There was already news, and we don't need to get in depth on it now today. But Clemson filing a lawsuit against the ACC is just one more example of how everything could blow up and a lot of it could reverse, right? I mean, there is no telling what's going to happen, but every day this whole industry of college sports moves closer to some kind of revolution, some kind of earthquake that is going to reconfigure all of it. And in 3 or 5 years, could there be some kind of Pac-12 basketball tournament? Absolutely, there could be, even with some of these schools.
Mike Rich, the screenwriter who wrote Secretariat and Finding Forrester, great screenwriter. He also came up to me at the event. He's a big Oregon State fan. His team was out. He was at the championship game, and he was holding a bag that had a Pac-12 sweatshirt in it. And I said, "What do you think?" And he said, "I don't know. I like happy endings." And he walked off. I mean, I just was like, it struck me in so many ways that there are so many people, fans, coaches, athletic directors, that would like to see the basketball and the track and field and the baseball and the softball and the volleyball, you know, put back together in some form or fashion. I think it will happen, but, you know, is it going to take 2 years or 20 years? I don't know that. We can go down the rabbit hole on another episode on what is happening with the ACC and college football playoff, the extension of that contract. But it's March Madness that people are focused on right now. And I want to know what you saw when you watched the men's and the women's tournaments. If we can just maybe talk a little bit about how we expect the 7 women's teams and the 4 men's teams to perform in these brackets.
It could be very reflective of what we've seen for the last 6 or 8 years, which is Pac-12 women's basketball is as good a league as there is in the country. Pac-12 men's basketball is absolutely not one of the best leagues in the country. And have the teams, you know, the women's teams do very well and the men's teams not do very well. I'm not sure on the men's side, you know, other than Arizona, I don't know that I give anybody a real good chance of getting out of the first weekend. On the women's side, I mean, out of 7 teams, I wouldn't be surprised if 4 or 5 of them got out of the first weekend, right? But, and that gets back to the feel in Vegas the last couple of weeks and the last few years, right? Pac-12, you're right. The breakup didn't have to happen. It certainly is not going to, the women's basketball programs are not going to be better off in their new conferences. The Pac-12 was thriving for them. But that also speaks to the whole problem, is that this conference was upside down, right? Football was not leading the way for all those years with the big programs happy and successful, right? The decisions that were made over the course of 10 or 12 years, they set the women's basketball and the Olympic sports up to have tremendous success consistently, but they didn't do that for men's basketball and especially football, and that's a big part of the reason that the collapse happened.
I think about 5 years into Larry Scott's tenure, that there should have been alarm bells going off with the presidents and chancellors, and ultimately it comes back to them. I mean, they were the leaders, and it wasn't just 12 of them. There were presidents and chancellors who dipped in for a year or two or three and then dipped out, were here for 4 years and then somewhere else. And there's a whole gaggle of those presidents and chancellors who are going to have to think long and hard about what happened to the
5 years into his tenure, he addressed the media at a Pac-12 football, you know, the summertime media extravaganza in L.A. And he stood up there and he said, you know, football, we haven't been successful in footballers as successful as we want, but our scoreboard is different. Our scoreboard is how are we doing across all sports and all NCAA championships, because we're the conference of champions. And he's sitting up there and he's talking one language about that stuff when the rest of the sport of football is talking a different language and everybody else is measuring their success based on football. And here's the commissioner of the Pac-12 at the time saying, no, we measure our success based on how we're doing in everything. And that culture of putting the Olympic sports at the, propping them up to the same level as football, you know, and I understand why they're doing it, and it was wrong then, and it was wrong every year, and the lack of prioritizing football for so many years ended up costing the conference. But you know, he was a big part of the, you know, he was a big part of the problem, just with not his decisions, just the entire approach of propping up the Olympic sports. You can't do that. It's a football first business.
Yeah, they were acting like they were the WCC or something, you know, and football didn't drive the bus, and ultimately it does. Like, I was going to say, like, if the media companies cared about golf and tennis and diving and swimming and gymnastics, the Pac-12 would have been well-positioned to get maximum dollars because of all those championships. But, yeah, they forgot where the bread is buttered, so to speak.
Who did you see in Vegas? Give me any men's teams, and how many women's teams did you see that you think are certainly Sweet 16 caliber, maybe even Final Four caliber?
Well, I think on the women's side, let's start there because I think the teams are better. Stanford has got Cameron Brink and Tara Vanderveer, and they're sitting as a highly seeded team. It's kind of paved for them. They'll get to the Sweet 16 or beyond. Juju Watkins and USC, they'll get to the Sweet 16. They're in a tough bracket. UCLA is capable of getting to a Sweet 16. I think Oregon State's going to get to a Sweet 16. I think with Reagan Beers healthy, they're good enough. I looked at, you know, the semifinalists in the women's bracket, and I said, gosh, I would not be surprised to see four Sweet 16 teams, three Elite Eight teams, one or two Final Four teams. I wouldn't be surprised by that. Now, when the bracket comes out, all of a sudden I see, you know, the bracket of death with, you know, in Albany with LSU and South Carolina and Caitlin Clark, and all of a sudden I go, okay, that's a different animal there, but I think the women's teams have a shot to get three in the Elite Eight and maybe a Final Four or two, depending on how the ball bounces. On the men's side, I fell out of love with Arizona at the tournament. I mean, I watched them go to sleep against Oregon, and Enfali Dante was the best player on the court in that semifinal. And so, you know, I don't think Oregon's ceiling to me feels like the Sweet 16, maybe, but I think Oregon can win a game. If they win two, I think that's the ceiling for them. I just think they don't have any depth, you know, and somebody at some point will have an answer for Enfali Dante, who, by the way, is shooting 85% from the floor in like the last 6 weeks. So he's just been he's been on fire. But I think Oregon's depth gets him at some point of the tournament. Arizona, you know, yeah, you could see them making a run, but I could also see them losing in the second round, Wilner. I mean, they looked vulnerable, and I wondered if, you know, they thought, hey, we're in the tournament. We don't, you know, did they mail it in? Did they take a night off? I don't know. But not impressed with them. Looked like the same old Arizona. And then Washington State's got great length, great size. They're well coached. This whole, is Kyle Smith going to be there thing is hanging over their head. If that's not a distraction, I could see Washington State getting to a Sweet 16. I think they can win. And, you know, they're up in the first round. They're up against one of the smallest teams in the country. They are one of the biggest teams in the country. I think that round one game is going to be an easy one for them. But I think beyond that, Colorado, streaky. You know, I have a hard time because there's a recency bias. But I think that those four teams might have maybe six wins between those four teams. I'm not gonna pencil any of them into the Elite Eight. I just think they'll start to bow out in the second and third rounds of the tournament.
I wonder about Washington State. I mean, most of their players, I don't even think were in kindergarten when Washington State was last in the tournament. And when Klay Thompson was playing for them, right? And Tony Bennett was coaching. And man, just that lack of experience, it'll be interesting to see how they manage that. Where are they? They're in Omaha. Drake was in the tournament last year. Drake's really good, won the Missouri Valley. I don't think Washington State's getting out of the first weekend. To me, Colorado has better players than they have shown all season for, yeah, there's been some injuries and all that, but they got some talent. I mean, they got a lottery pick who is like their third leading scorer and is coming off the bench, Cody Williams. If they get everything in gear, they could win a couple, but is there a reason to have trust or faith that they will? And same with Oregon. I think Oregon injuries too, but those teams have got players, and they all have the, certainly Arizona, Colorado, and Oregon have the talent to get to the second weekend. But we'll see if they will. I'm rolling the dice with Arizona. I think that Caleb Love is going to get them out of the first weekend. He's done it before in the tournament, right? He had like 28 against Duke in the semifinals a couple years ago. I think he will be their salvation.
Well, he'd better. He didn't show up against Jackson Shellstead, a freshman, in the Pac-12, yep. Pac-12 semifinal. But there's a recency bias. But I disagree with you on Washington State. I think they can get to the Sweet 16. I don't think they can get to the Elite Eight. No way. But I think they are big enough and well-coached enough if the Kyle Smith thing isn't hanging over their head, because we've seen that we've seen it happen in football. We've seen it happen in basketball tournaments where, you know, there's a coach who's being interviewed for jobs or there's search firms hanging out. And I was at the Stanford Washington State game. You know, Jared Haas gets fired after getting knocked out of the Pac-12 tournament. And, you know, there was a search firm sitting courtside before the game. And I talked to Glenn Sugiyama, who's with the search firm that's based in Chicago. And, you know, I wondered, is he there for Stanford or is he there for Washington State? You know, is he there to talk to Kyle Smith, you know? And so I think Kyle Smith's going to leave Washington State after this season. But I think there's a piece around this program. They've watched, you know, Rodman and Bamba leave last year, and Kyle Smith kind of ultimately gave his blessing for it. And I think players will understand when it's his time to go that he's doing what's best for himself. But I think the Washington State fans are really ready to enjoy this NCAA tournament. I hope they do get a couple of games or maybe three.
Well, and we should note that for Washington State and Oregon State, what happened in Las Vegas could not have worked out better. There was a very clear scenario in which the Pac-12 was going to end up with two NCAA tournament bids, right? Colorado loses in the quarterfinals. Washington State and Arizona, one of those two teams wins the tournament, and those are the only two in the NCAAs. Instead, the Pac-12 ended up with basically the maximum it could have possibly gotten, four teams in. The whole thing worked out perfectly, and that means more money for Washington State and Oregon State, right? And it's a complicated process, but basically for our listeners, every game played by a Pac-12 school in the men's tournament is $2 million that will go into the bank account over the course of 6 years. And that money will get split by Washington State and Oregon State. So four teams in the tournament, that's even if all four teams lose their first game, that is $8 million that's going into the Pac-12 for Oregon State and Washington State to split over the course of 6 years. If everybody wins one game, that's eight units, and that's $16 million. So you can kind of keep track at home. You can score at home if you want. Every game played is going to be $2 million for the Beavers and Cougars.
And you know, that's why I think Pat Chun, the AD at Washington State, and Scott Barnes at Oregon State will have their pom-poms out. Of course, they'll be rooting for Washington State to win games. But if Arizona goes to the Final Four, they're ringing the register for Oregon State and Washington State. So I think there's going to be a lot of intrigue there, a lot of rubbernecking. On the women's side, people asked me this in my mailbag on Monday at johnconzano.com. The women's tournament set up differently. You win games, that doesn't get you money for your conference. There's a flat fee that the networks are paying to carry the women's tournament and 39 other NCAA championship events. And so it's just pride on the women's side. Do you think the men's tournament or the women's tournament, which one's going to be better?
Ooh, good question. I don't know. Kind of depends how long Iowa lasts in the women's tournament, right? Because Caitlin Clark is such a draw. And it depends on the upset situation. The men's tournament is fascinating, kind of a fascinating paradox, right? Because everybody loves it when the small schools win. But if you're talking about eyeballs on the Final Four, you're much better off with UConn, North Carolina, you know, Houston, Purdue, than you are with Florida Atlantic's and San Diego State's, because people will tune in for the big brand. So the ideal scenario for the men's tournament is a whole bunch of upsets, but four big brands end up surviving to get to the semifinals.
Yeah, I think there's so much more intrigue on the women's side of the bracket. You know, I want to see what happens to South Carolina, LSU. Will Juju Watkins deliver great performances? Of course, there's Caitlin Clark hysteria. We've got the Portland Regional with Cameron Brink in it and Juju Watkins in it. But the other, you know, if I saw the ESPN's going to have Holly Rowe kind of shadowing Caitlin Clark. And, you know, they announced that before the turn, a few days before the tournament. We're going to have all this exclusive coverage. We're going to, this continued coverage by ESPN. It bothered me a little bit, Wilner. Not because it's Caitlin Clark. Like, I think it's a great story. She's phenomenal. She's playing, I'm watching. Or even Holly Rowe. She's great at what she does. She's earned that. But it bothered me a little bit that ESPN is going to basically announcing that this is the story before the games have been played. Because I think there are so many other great stories in the women's bracket. And I wish that, you know, Caitlin Clark's going to be a story when Iowa plays, but I want to see coverage of this other stuff. I don't want ESPN shoveling coal like it did with Lynn Sanity and Tim Tebow and just telling us what the story is before the games have even been played. Because, you know, let's say she has a bad game or whatever. Like, everyone's going to be like, oh, the tournament fizzled out. Like, that's not the story. You know, this tournament tells a story with every game that gets played. And so I would just really hope that ESPN, in addition to all the Caitlin Clark Palooza, just lets the tournament tell story.
So you want sports and not entertainment, but E comes before S in ESPN, right?
It just bothers me when I see them basically saying, this is the story, we're dedicated to it. And I'm looking over at South Carolina, and I'm looking at UCLA and USC, and I'm looking at Stanford, and you know, how many games can Oregon State win? And I'm looking at the rest of the bracket going, what players have I not heard about yet that you're going to fall in love with in the men's and the women's tournament? Every year it happens. There's a St. Joseph's or a George Mason in the men's bracket. And, you know, so I want the stories to drive the news instead of them deciding 2 weeks before the tournament, Caitlin Clark's going to be a huge story. We're going to put Holly Rowe on her 24/7. And Holly, your job is to shovel coal.
But on the men's side, there's nobody to do that with, right? I think that speaks to a much larger problem that men's basketball has. All the transfers, NBA draft, early entries, there's not really many personalities, right? There's no players that are going to attract mainstream fans. And that's one of the things that college men's basketball has going that needs to get fixed. And I don't know how they're going to fix it. I mean, we saw the transfer portal opened yesterday. It was like, there's hundreds of players in the portal yesterday, right? The tournament hasn't even started. So, you know, the men, they got to figure out a way to be able to create personalities on the men's side, the way Sabrina was on the women's side, or Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, I don't know how you do that when the men's players are leaving, but I do know, like, you know, over the years, we've gotten a chance to know some players. They sort of emerge. Like, you know, a lot of people didn't know about Ja Morant before the men's NCAA tournament was played. And I can remember some Gonzaga teams with Disco Danny Dickow, who was running around out there with his long hair shooting threes. You know, I think America gets to meet players in this in these tournaments. But you're right. I mean, I think some of it is the early entry and what the NBA draft has done to men's college basketball. The women's players are staying longer, and they're the retention of those women's teams is a little stronger. And then, you know, the portal has killed continuity. Who's on the team?
Killed it.
You know?
that will stop, you know, I think once the players get declared employees, whether that's in the next year or next 2 years, you know, that may tamp down a little bit of the transfer thing because the NIL won't be as big a deal. Ideally, right, men's basketball would have the same deal as college baseball. Either you go, if you go to school, it's for 3 years, or you don't go at all. Now, getting that through the collective bargaining process at the pro ranks with the NBA is going to be difficult, but, you know, we'll see how employment status ends up changing the player movement, but it's one of the problems. The men's college basketball has got another problem, right, with the expansion of college football playoff and the NFL playoffs. It encroaches, those seasons encroach even more on the college basketball regular season. There's a lot of issues. I'm worried about the future of college basketball. The tournament's always going to be great. They could expand it too big, right? That's a whole nother podcast episode for us. But there is reason to be worried about the long-term health of men's college basketball.
And yeah, expand this tournament and you're going to kill the beauty of it. And
I think if they do it in the right way, if they go to 80, so basically there would be four first fours, or go to 80, that would possibly work. They have to keep it on one page. You have to have the brackets on, this is my big thing. You have to have the brackets on one page or on one page on your computer screen. Either an 8x11 piece of paper or your computer screen. It's got to be one page, or else you're going to lose the office pool. You're going to lose mainstream fans. That the brackets are intrinsically tied to the event in a way that no other brackets in any other sport are tied to those postseasons.
I also think it matters who you put in if you're going to expand. And I don't want to see
the no doubt
ninth place team in the SEC. You know, I want, if you're going to expand this thing, at least half of those additional teams should be mid-major, not middling majors. It has to be the Indiana States of the world. I want to see these programs. I want to, that's what makes the early rounds of the tournament. The, you know, the Blue Bloods, the Elite Eight and the Final Four, that's your turf. But the early rounds of this tournament belong to Furman and Davidson and Drexel and, you know, Drake, and it that's what makes it fun. And we're all Googling, where are schools? Like, you know, where are they located? And we get to know them a little bit and get to see them, and, you know, it's their shining moment, so to speak.
We shall see how it goes, because as with football, the SEC and the Big Ten have their own plans, and I don't know if they're going to hijack the basketball tournament the way they did the CFP, but that is certainly a big concern for a lot of schools, right? And the two sports are very different.
Yep. If there's major money there, Wilner, if there's money there, they'll go after it. You know, the question is there enough money there?
Is there enough?
It? Yeah.
That's the big question. Is there enough? How much more are, you know, Turner and CBS willing to pay for additional first four games? And I don't know. You know, ESPN isn't paying any, they're not on the hook to pay anything more for early round college football playoff games in a 14 team field as opposed to a 12 team field. There's no more money in that, which is why they may end up not going to 14. But I don't know that that it's worthwhile to the networks in a way that would make it worthwhile to the Big Ten and the SEC. They want access, and I'm not sure if they'll get it. There's 360 Division I teams in college basketball. 68 make the tournament right now, right? And there's 133 FBS football teams, and the postseason is gonna, the playoff is gonna have 12. So, in a way, you have to look at it, the access in terms of what the entire group or pool of potential participants is.
I'm John Canzano. You can read me at johncanzano.com. He's John Wilner. Find him at Pac-12Hotline.com. Before we go, a little bit on the Stanford and the Washington coaching searches, Wilner. Jared Haas out at Stanford. You got Mike Hopkins out at Washington. What do you expect there?
Well, I would expect that once some teams start losing in the NCAAs, we may start hearing more, especially Washington, right? I think they've got Danny Sprinkle from Utah State is probably on their list, and he's playing. Stanford, we'll see what Stanford does. They've made some bad hires. That program has deteriorated over the last 15 years, and a lot of it is just due to bad management and bad hires and sticking with those bad hires. So I'll be curious to see if they try to hire somebody from Stanford's, an alum or former assistant coach, or if they go outside of Stanford and try to hire another Johnny Dawkins or Jared Haas. Kyle Smith, you mentioned him earlier. He could be a candidate for either Washington or Stanford.
I like him at Stanford. His Bay Area experience at USF, and he's a guy, too, that, as Washington State and Oregon State go off to play a WCC schedule, I can't see Kyle Smith excited about going to do that. He's been in the WCC. He's done that. And I think he's ready for something else. And I think most Washington State fans sort of recognize, hey, he put in 5 years. They lost Tony Bennett after three. I think that they sort of accept that as part, the cost of doing business. And I think they're on a wild and fun ride right now. But I think Stanford will look hard at Kyle Smith. And my question is, can he do better?
Oh, yeah, well, definitely. It depends what the options are, right? Some of those big name schools are filling, the vacancies are being filled. He did coach at Columbia for 6 years, so he has got a background at a, high academic private school that should appeal to Stanford. But we'll see if there's openings. Big 12 openings seem to me to be better fits for him, but we'll see what the carousel brings. I think it's going to be a wild month on the court and the transfer portal, the coaching carousel, kind of like what December is for college football. That's what we're going to get for the next 4 or 5 weeks.
I also think it was interesting. Washington State Athletic Director Pat Chun was behind Washington State's bench all throughout the Pac-12 tournament on the men's side. I think he's going to do everything he can to try to retain Kyle Smith, but it may ultimately come down to the opportunities that are in front of him. And, I don't think anybody begrudges him if he looks elsewhere. All right. I appreciate everybody who listens to this podcast. Make sure you subscribe. Thank you to all of you who came up at the Pac-12 tournament, Wilner. People kept coming up, tapping me on the shoulder, saying, I listened to you on you and Wilner on the podcast. And I thank everybody who does that and continues to listen to us. So thank you.
Thanks very much, everyone. We will be back next week. Plenty to talk about. Appreciate you listening.